Hey, welcome to the Mead House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
It is, well, we got a weird rainstorm today, but it's been a nice break from all the hot weather.
Yeah, so well, I'll take it. Did drop it a bit? I'm very happy about that. But honestly, the heat was breaking before this. Mm-hmm. I think it's what caused the thunderstorm to come through.
Wouldn't surprise me.
But I'm happy about it either way. It's just nice to take a break from that. Yeah.
The dad in me goes, we needed this rain.
Yes, we needed this rain. Yes, it's very important. Love the rain. Hey, guys, welcome back to the Mead House. Love having you here. Thank each and everyone for listening to and giving us your feedback. I got one feedback I'm going to share with you in a little bit here.
Oh, really? Okay.
Somebody had a question for us, sure. and they just told me directly because I happened to be next to them at the time.
All right.
But thank you, all of you guys, the feedback you've given us, write in, call in, whatever you're going to do. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to know. We'd love to hear from it. And thank you for all the numbers that are gradually climbing up there. We're really appreciative of it. We also need to thank Box and Barleycorn for being our sponsors again.
Yes, Box and Barleycorn have been our sponsors since we got this show back on the road here. And what a fantastic group to work with. I mean, we talked a couple weeks back about the starter kits and how the value for money, the amount of stuff you're getting and the stuff that you're not going to need to get later are all kind of just there.
Yeah, everything up front. And we love working with them. Jake and the gang, they're just good people.
And it was not planned. That was just kind of, we were looking through stuff before the show and went, oh, well,
we got the best deal we can find locally.
It looks like, yeah, no, there really isn't a lot of competition here at the end of the day.
No, really. But, but don't forget when you go online to Box and Barleycorn to get your supplies, and they got everything you need from ingredients to equipment to recipes to just feedback if you need help with what you're doing for anything fermentable.
Right.
Your beer, wine, mead, cheese, yogurt, kombucha.
All over the place. And, little distilling equipment, too, because sometimes that's fun.
Yeah, sometimes it's fun, too. But the discount code you can get is MHP10 for your 10% off online. And, if you're local, go in there, ask if you can get it, because you heard us here on the Mead House, and see if you get 10% off there.
I'm willing to bet they'll throw you a deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff, the question I got, I was at the Renaissance Festival, and a guy recognized me, and he goes, oh, yeah, you're the guy that does that mead talk. I said, it's called Mead House, thank you. He said, yeah, what do you do with the yeast when you're done fermenting? Legit question. We've gone over little bits and pieces here and there. I thought of everything. I said, okay. And I answered as best I could, but if you could add more to it, that'd be awesome. I said, actually, the all of the meat cake and all that comes in at the end of the formation, that you hopefully falls to the bottom. Right. Generally, we dump it. We don't keep it.
Nine times out of ten, it just goes down the drain, along with whatever other detritus is down there. Because,
But I think his question is more, what can you do with it?
And there are a few things.
So I know one thing, you can just flat drink it. It's not going to hurt you.
Well, I mean, and if you go to health food stores and things like that, you can buy little flakes of brewer's yeast.
Yeah.
Which is, it's basically just that. It's been taken, it's the yeast detritus. It's been taken from a brewery. It's been laid out and dried. And then people eat that it's a nutritional supplement.
B12, so, I think.
Right. It's high in B12.
Yeah.
A few other proteins in there. And it's apparently it's great for making cheese flavored stuff for vegans that don't want to eat cheese products.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's used in mac and cheese recipes and the like.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Or fermentation cheese.
So there's one option. Another option, you can throw it, from what I've heard, into a compost heap or something like that. And that gives you a source of, again, nitrogen and other stuff. It's a little bit wet, so you got to be careful with, your additions and things like that. The third option, though, especially for more stable, survivable yeast, is wash it.
Yeah, and you can use it again.
Mm-hmm. And you don't even necessarily need to wash it to reuse it. You could literally just rack off the mostly clear secondary to bottling, leave your cake, and then pitch something else on top of it.
Yeah, you just start all over again. I didn't think about the composting, but the other ones I told him about, because I said, I'm going to bring it up with you to make sure I'm not missing any real big bases
here. Yeah, I don't think I'm missing any either, but I could be wrong. The other option, though, is washing. And that's basically you get your stuff down to the detritus level. You get a big glass jar, mix in a small amount of distilled water, just enough to kind of break up that yeast clump.
Cake, yeah.
Right. And then pour that into your jar for saving. A lot of people will like to refrigerate, let it sit for a little bit. And once you've got it refrigerated for as some people say an hour, some people say as little as 10 minutes. It's kind of a, play it by ear. You're supposedly going to get a thicker layer at the bottom and a kind of a cloudy layer of liquid. You want to decant the cloudy layer of liquid onto into another glass jar that's going to have live yeast in it. The thicker layer at the bottom that's settled is basically just dead stuff. It's not going to do anything. That compost heap down the drain, like we were talking about before, you could eat it. It's not going to do anything brew friendly
Now,
for you.
I will say, when you drink, if you mix it up, leave it in the bottle, it's fine. But when you drink it, it does add a grainy taste across your palate. It is a solid sandy like, very fine sandy like, but nonetheless. But honestly, it's not that bad. It doesn't change a lot of the flavor because it's what gave it the flavor in the first place for the most part. But yeah, but eat it, drink it, compost it, whatever you need to, guy. That,
Yeah,
but I hope that answers your question. But I want to bring that up soon because you caught me literally Sunday. And I
that's
wanted to get that over
and we as we've said before numerous times, we appreciate the listener feedback. So
here.
if we're able to jump in there and throw out an answer to the question, why not, right?
Yeah, the wine of the day.
Wine of the day. This came from listener and friend of the show, Kyle Ducharme.
Yeah, met Kyle, love him to death. He's a great mead maker.
He is really fantastic, really talented. He sent us specifically a smoked one in answer to a question we had a few episodes back when we were talking about smoked mead. And I didn't want to break that one out immediately because honestly, I want to talk to him about how he approached the smoked
Yeah,
stuff.
this may be one of our first actual online interviews we
Right.
do.
I just haven't had time to get the equipment up and running because, we had to, we were going to do that right after Valkyrie's Horn and then.
Well, and we are standing members of the Department of Procrastination Department.
It is kind of a miracle that we make this happen week after
We
week.
got yes, it really is.
There's so much other stuff going on that's like, oh. Anyway, he was kind enough to send us four bottles. And this one is a black raspberry, black currant, and Morello cherry mead. It's what he's calling his Heart of Darkness clone, which I don't. Have you tried Kenchiram's Heart of Darkness?
I haven't. I really wish I would have, but I know he's gotten his last 14-gallon batch up recently, and I don't think I'm gonna have any chance to get any of
Oh
that.
yeah, no, that's gonna I could mortgage I could get a second mortgage on the house to get a bottle of
Yeah,
it, but
but I've never had a chance, but I've heard it's absolutely fabulous.
right. And it is very fruit heavy, and that kind of tracks for what we're gonna talk about today,
Which
which is
is,
no water meats.
waterless meads. I have a few questions about this. I love waterless meads. Some people say, "Oh, it has a very jammy flavor." I don't really like. I love it. I think it's awesome.
I mean, it does depend on the fruit you start with, for
Yeah.
one, but let's give a little evaluation of this. It is dark, dark red. You can,
Is opaque.
if I hold it up to a very bright light,
I can see a shimmer.
you see right along the edges and not in the middle. It's just dark and thick, and that smell is very fruit heavy,
It's
though.
all very heavy fruit. Well, yeah. That gum is nice.
Yeah, that's tart. That's fruity.
It smells heavier than it tastes.
Yes, and it is sweet. It's about as sweet as I am willing to tolerate in a mead, but
Well, now this is
the
not the high end of
balance
my.
is there.
I can tell a little bit sweeter, but this is really nice. I love good sweet meat. This is good.
This is the tannin is there, the acid is there. They're all nicely in line and kind of supporting each other, singing their praises. You get so much fruit, a little. The honey is kind of nondescript, but it would have to be really descriptive to compete with the fruit flavor.
Yeah,
So
well,
I'm not mad about that at all.
black raspberry, black currant, Morello cherry, those are strong fruit flavors.
Those are all
The
dark
honey's gonna have to,
fruits with
you have to use a
strong
dark honey
flavors.
to even come close.
Right. And I am not mad that we get, a hint of honey and a lot of fruit.
Yeah, I mean,
That's
this is
the balance
Kyle,
we're going for.
you don't disappoint. You just don't, man.
Yeah, no, we are going to enjoy this bottle thoroughly, sir. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. All right, now the subject is waterless or no water meads.
Right. No water meads. And I think I hear this phrase, this descriptor thrown around a lot on whether it's TikTok or YouTube or Facebook, Reddit, various places where us mead hounds are wont to haunt.
Spend our time, yes. Oh, look, I have 10 minutes. I can watch a video or two.
And it applies. There are a lot of different ways that this kind of gets kicked about and bandied about. And some of them, I'm like, okay, well, yeah, that's notable. Some of them are like, well, okay, yeah, you didn't use water, but what you got instead is pretty watery.
Okay, for example, would you, okay, I make an apple pie meat, you know this. I love apple pie meat. I don't use water, I use cider. Is that considered waterless?
Yes,
Okay.
that is the first category and the most cheap category, I would say, for this
Water
whole
has,
idea.
apples have a lot of water.
The apples have a lot of water. Another thing I've seen people do is like juice product, whether it's like the blueberry juice you get at the store or pineapple juice in the can, all the different sources of just a juice. But you just put a juice into a fermenter, you add honey, ferment.
Which is that was actually my first question because I never considered my apple pie mead
Waterless?
waterless because apple's so watery. It's literally a fruit, a juice I got from Lewisburg Cider to make my cider mead.
And we both know there is indeed a lot of water in these meats. But by the same token, at the end of the day, what we're talking about in all of these cases is
We're not adding more water.
right.
Just, we're not adding just more spring water.
We're effectively making fruit bombs, and we're using only the juice of the fruit and not anything associated with it.
Exactly. So take this, you're not going to get a chunk of meat. There's still going to be wine. Okay, guys. All right.
But that said, there's a lot of different approaches to this, and juice is probably the simplest. I'll give them that. Another one I've thought about doing, and it is actually, all of these are probably going to be expensive. Your fruit is maybe even more expensive than honey pound for pound.
Thin your fruit. I mean, I
And
get apple
depending on your
cheap.
hunger, Let's say we want to do something a little wild, and we want to make a tangerine mead or a marionberry mead or something that's a little harder to
Or
source.
the choke cherry I used once.
Choke cherries might be an option. Elderberries are definitely an option. You know what we can do there? There's a company called Oregon Fruit Company, and they make 42-pound bucket or aseptic bags of fruit puree.
Okay.
It's just fruit puree. Now, how much does a single gallon of water weigh?
About 8 pounds.
And so a 42-gallon thing of fruit puree and juice,
That's gonna be a lot more than 8 times whatever.
by my logic, that's around 5 gallons. Even if it's a heavy puree, it's got
You're
a lot
talking
of
about
stuff.
40 plus pounds without a problem.
They are billed as 42-pound, boxes that they ship them in. And by time you add honey, yeah, way more than 40 pounds. But I got to figure, volume-wise, we're looking at about 5 gallons. Once we add enough honey to get to whatever level of sweetness and
This is
alcohol
not a 5 gallon
content,
batch, it's like a 7 gallon batch with all the honey and everything else in
it's
it.
5 and change, I would
Yeah.
say. I'm not saying we're going to add a ton, because it is just, it's straight up fruit juice and fruit fiber,
Fiber of the puree, yeah.
whatever the stuff is still inside it. There's going to be wastage too, so you're going to want to go over five. If you want five finished, you're going to want to go five and a half if you can.
You're Okay, I'm again, guys. I look for the good and not for the. I'm getting exactly 5 gallons. That's not my goal.
There are some times where math is not your friend, and you can just say, okay, well, we wanted to get 30 bottles out of this, but I'll settle for 27.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be mad because I have 27. But anyway, but fruit speed. Okay, so we got the really fruit, the water heavy ones like. Say apples or grapes or blueberries are pretty good for that.
We've got all kinds of options though from like this company or other companies offering this aseptic fruit puree. We've got apricots and black currants and blueberries, blood oranges, car-car oranges, lemon, lime, mango, marionberry, loganberry, pineapple, passion fruit, pink guava, pineapple. I already said pineapple, pomegranate, plum, and prickly pear. Prickly pear could be really
Pretty
interesting.
good beginning. I wouldn't mind that one.
The tangerine, I'm really fascinated by. And some of these are expensive.
Yeah.
A lot of these in the 42-pound, roughly 5 gallon packaging, $92, $93.
Yeah, expensive guys, but and like so many things, when you're making something, What you put in is what you get out.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get the quality, what you want, get the quality in first too.
Some of these, though, like the pomegranate or the dragon fruit, more like $130.
Well, those are A, they have to be shipped in.
Yes.
B, they have to be pureed.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I've worked with dragon fruit juice before. I just had the juice juiced in a bottle. And I had to get several bottles, and they were prohibitively expensive just as a juice.
There is definitely I'm sure, a supply and demand metric here that mm-hmm. is affecting these prices. But these are pureed, so they are relatively ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do a lot of freezing, thawing, what have you. They are aseptically processed, meaning I believe they have some kind of heat stabilization that's keeping them pretty close to like the proper flavor, but they're also shelf stable if you know you're going to order and you don't.
It takes you a week or two.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to have a problem.
And I actually saw when we scrolled through those pictures, I saw the one we talked about a lot that we said it would have to be a waterless mead in order to get the flavor out. Watermelon. They have it pureed.
I would think, and I could be wrong, not only would we need a waterless watermelon mead,
mm-hmm.
which is a funny thing to say.
Yeah.
I'm just pausing a moment to chuckle at myself.
Yeah.
Not only would you
enjoy need the irony,
a waterless watermelon mead, you would need like a freeze concentrate
mm-hmm.
the watermelon mead. Get some of the water content out of the watermelon puree.
So to get more flavor out of it.
Right. More of the flavor and the sugar and the good stuff left over.
But point is, it's there.
Right.
I mean, it's a good start for a waterless mead for a watermelon mead.
Mm-hmm. Beyond that, there are other options for making waterless meads. The classic one, the one that I think about when people say, hey, I've got a waterless mead, enjoy this, is just using whole fruit.
Okay. I assume you crush it down to a point. So you have some of the liquid out. So these have something to latch onto.
There are a few different approaches to this.
Okay. I
mean, with your blessing, I'd like to take some time to talk about it.
Oh, please do.
So
I want to know.
And here's the thing that occurs to me as I'm thinking about this, and I think I saw somebody do this a while back, too. This works with basically any kind of fruit, whether it's fresh or harvested, and we are at the early part of September now, so it is harvest time.
It's harvest time, guys.
It might be a great time to grab some stuff that's going a little too ripe and
get the B grade, not the A grade.
If it's ready to turn, it's ready to turn into mead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This works just as well for frozen fruit as it does for freshly picked, about to turn, what have you. If it's fruit in its whole state, go.
Yeah. You and I frequently will freeze fruit before we use it for mead.
Yes.
Break down cellular walls. We mm-hmm. talked about that.
Yeah, it's easy to work with. Easy to help.
Mash it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Go. And we go from there. So you just literally mash it up a little bit, throw it in, add honey and yeast. At this point? Is that it?
Not quite.
Okay.
Because if we're just using the fruit, let's say one of the easy approaches to doing an all fruit, no water added mead, to my mind, is getting like one of the triple berry blends you get for like, you know, 4 pounds for
the smoothie blends.
Yeah.
At
Costco or whatever. Get you, you know, 20 to 30 pounds of that worth of bags. Thaw. You're already partway there.
Yeah, true.
The trick is to get, even with the freeze-thaw cycles that we usually advocate for, there's still a lot of berry material that we've got to get the juice out of before we even worry about introducing honey.
Blend?
Yes, but then we're risking breaking open seeds, which are a tannic mess and not so great.
Okay.
Pectic enzyme.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
You got to, basically, from what I've heard, The rote, most common way to approach this is just to dose heavily, sit it in a sealed bucket, and let it sit for about 24 hours. I've seen some people from there, they will, after it's been hit with pectic enzyme, they'll take and use like the paint mixer drill press attachment and try and just blend the snot out of it and break up stuff further once it's already been weakened. I've seen other people take and get like, you know, the same kind of cider press, put it in there, with a couple layers of cheesecloth or what have you, and get the juice out of it so that they're just worried about the juice and not worried about the fruit particles.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good idea as
Not
far as
bad.
Wastage.
If you actually can put fruit in your basket, remember, guys, bags are your friends.
They really are.
I mean, I mistakenly did it without a bag one time. That will never happen again. But, you know, have a quick, easy way of getting it out and squeeze out the bag and leave all the stuff you want behind and take all the parts that you don't want to filter out later out with the bag.
Pectic enzyme is the easy approach to that. It's the most common approach to that. There are,
I like that.
However, some other options. One of those is, and I'm trying to find it here.
Now, I did forget about pectic enzyme, but I don't know of any others, to be honest.
Well, Lallemand, the same guys that make our suite of yeast, wine yeast that we use for so much stuff, like the 71B, the D47, K1V116, that whole, all the little packets where you get 5 grams at a time at the homebrew store, they make a whole range of other stuff. And I'm trying to find it here. It's a product called, that they call Lallezyme. And they've got a couple different varieties of it. One is EX. Lallezyme EX is not made for berries.
It says it's an emaceration enzyme. Mm-hmm. So basically, when you macerate fruit, you're smashing it up.
Can you guess what industry requires a lot of smashed up fruit that this would be designed for, from a company that makes things for baking and fermentation?
Jam, jelly.
It's not a terrible thought. And it's
juice.
We are starting with the juice process. It's for red wine.
Okay, red wine.
You got to be able to get all that, the juice out of those grape skins.
Grape skins, yeah.
And a lot of the color from the red wine comes from the grape skins, too.
I was thinking it was alcoholic, but I couldn't think of any because I don't use wine. I use meat. I don't think it's the same thing.
Right. Yeah, well, no, it's a product that's specifically made for vintners to help get more out of per pound their big grape harvest.
Nice.
And break down some of the skins so that when they get in contact with the skins during their maturation process, you get more of the color and tannin and all the good stuff that comes with all that skin contact, right? Thing is, if it works for grapes, it works for other stuff too.
Oh yeah.
Blueberries, berries of any kind, most fruits. There was at one time another one that was more geared towards white wine as opposed to red wine. And the idea is less color stability and more just extraction and
fair enough.
Comparable flavor profiles.
So less red rouge.
More a little white, but you know, I would think that'd be good for white currants or apples or pears or any kind of
white lighter, peaches. Yeah, anything like that. Yeah,
colored fruits, peaches in general, probably. Yeah. So the Lallezyme products are more expensive than pectinase, potentially more useful though.
Since they're designed to mash up and pull the juice out anyway, yeah, I can see that.
Right. Plus, the EX version, the one for red wine, also has color stability stuff.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about, you know, making a strawberry mead
or cranberry or
something
or blueberry,
that red that is kind of persnickety and especially in the watermelon and the strawberry wants to just drop out after it's been aging for a while.
Yeah, like a wheat.
Is it gonna fix your problem?
No.
Could it help? Yeah, maybe. Worth a shot.
Yeah, the color fades out like in a week. Oh man, it's so frustrating.
It really is. So my thought is, as far as if we're gonna take the whole fruit approach to a waterless mead, yeah, we've got to take whether it's the pectic enzyme or the Lallezyme or what have you, we got to let that sit and macerate for at least a day.
Okay.
We got to punch down. Generally, people like to do some kind of separation of the fruit mass and the juice that results from it, but it's not necessary per se. The thing that you do need to do, we've advocated a bunch of times, I've advocated a bunch of times, that hey, that first week or so that you're fermenting, you gotta get in there and mix it up, and you got to degas, you got to punch the cap down. In this case, you've got a lot of cap. You got to make sure you're turning it over, punching the cap down, and keeping it hydrated so it doesn't get moldy.
Yeah, the first example that we ever saw was we were at the Brinsel's Festival together a long time ago as a group, and there was a guy making peach wine, with actual peaches.
Yeah.
And the peaches were floating in these 55-gallon drums.
Yeah.
And you have to come in regularly and stir it to bring the top peaches down, the bottom peaches up, to keep it mixed. Mm-hmm. Prevented a lot of problems and made better wine.
You want things wet, not damp. Otherwise, if it's just a little wet, that's a great spot for mold to grow.
Yeah, and mold's going to kill you.
It's at least going to give you a poor flavor in the mead and make it not fun.
Yeah. You don't eat moldy bread, you probably don't want to drink moldy mead. So, yeah.
I'm no expert, but I've smelled mold a few times from various experiences cleaning out garages and basements and things like that. And, you know, if it smells like that, it probably tastes pretty similar. I'm not particularly eager to jump in and try it.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good without it.
No, thanks.
So, yeah, but, you know, stir it. And yes. And honestly, if you do it in a bucket, guys, easy as it comes.
Right. Just pull the lid off and
get a quick stir on with your spoon.
Turn everything over so that everything gets in contact with the must. That way, you know, you're getting, and the increasing alcohol is only going to help you too.
Yeah.
It's
the more the yeast is taking hold of that stuff, the less anything else is.
Right. Exactly. So I know some people will like to do, like I said, the fruit separation real early. Some people will wait until it's gotten pretty well on its way. But at some point or another, yeah, you're going to want to separate the fruit mass from the mead mass.
Now, we have said this before. I'm going to say it now. Leave the skins. There's a great amount of tannin in that. It will only help your flavor. One thing I want to ask, though, is the seeds. Like, let's talk peach, apple. The larger seeds.
So, stone fruits.
I think you should remove them.
From a muss and fuss, especially peaches or plums.
Apricots.
Right. Anything with a large center stone. Mangoes, for example.
Oh, yeah.
I would advocate for just removing those in the course of processing your fruit and getting it ready.
When you first start. Yeah. I would.
Because
apples.
Apples, I don't mess with much. I kind of just let it go.
Okay.
Because I honestly use whole apple very infrequently. I use the cider pretty frequently if I'm going to do anything apple-related. So there's not much risk of seed in the first place. But the apple seeds are not that big.
And the reason I brought this up is because somebody else is going to say, but you get like cyanide from apple seeds and other things. And yeah, but think how much is there per how much you're making.
If you're going to drink enough cider or sizer, that you have to worry about the cyanide content of the alcohol you consumed.
You're probably going to pass out first.
You should really be more worried about the ethanol content of the beverage that you're going to consume. Because it's a toxin. It is one of the most widely marketed and sold toxins in the entire world. But it is, at the end of the day, still a toxin and probably way more risky than the tiny amount of cyanide.
Yeah, you're not going to get much out of the seeds and stuff. I'd remove the seeds out of the stone fruits for convenience.
Right.
So I don't have to wrestle with them later.
I think, honestly, cherries are the middle ground. On a good day, when I'm feeling motivated, I would destone those before I put them in there.
And honestly, guys, there's actually cherry pitter devices out there. You put a cherry in, you punch it.
Some work better than others from what I've been told, but yeah.
Yeah, no, but they exist. And if you really feel the need to do it and make it a little easier on yourself, do it. Otherwise, don't worry about it.
If I'm having a lazy day and I'm just making a fun mead, I'll probably use, oh, okay, well, I'll get it later.
Mash, 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 freeze, 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 mash, 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 in the pot.
Yeah. I'm sure the seeds will float more than the fruit once it gets broken down.
Yeah. So and it's in a bag anyway, so I'm going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. The trick is, whether we're talking about stone fruits or apples or any measure of different kinds of fruits, try not to break them open. The inside of the seeds, once you get out of that outer coating, the
outer shell,
right, then you get a lot more tannin character and a lot more of the vegetal character from everything I've been told. So try to keep them intact. If you're going to keep them in the meat, if you're going to, you know, pull them out before you even start fermenting, less of a worry, less of a bother. But I would try to keep it whole just so you don't have little bits and bobs floating around.
Which is why I mentioned the skin earlier. That's the tan you want. It's got more of the flavor you want. The seeds are not.
Right. There are some seed preparations or things that are, from what I've been told, very nice. Like, there is an Arabic spice called malab, which is, it's made from the pits of cherries.
Okay.
And apparently, I have heard from like my previous co-host, Mississippi Chris, that putting some malab in a cherry mead gets it a nice, kind of close to cherry pie flavor.
Wow. Okay, I didn't know that.
So,
And back to Ben, the guy I met at the Renaissance Festival last weekend from Oklahoma. He said he also makes a big mead. There's gonna be a lot of seeds in that.
Yes.
And he goes, it's so sweet. He puts a little bit of fig juice in it at the very end and secondary, and that's his sweetener.
Well, yeah, that's definitely an approach to sweetening.
Yeah, so.
I have to wonder if he's using fresh figs or dried figs, you know? Because those are two very different flavor
Oh yeah,
profiles.
I mean the way he spoke of it, he'd use fresh if he could, dried and rehydrated if he couldn't. Yeah.
Okay, well.
Well, hopefully we'll get him on the line. We'll get him on the air and talk to him and have him, get it straight from him.
Yeah, let's get the story on that. I'm down to hear more.
Mean, well, he was talking a lot of we. I got him talking about mead. Surprise, surprise. But he was a, oh yeah, blacksmithing me goes hand in hand, buddy. I'm sitting here, alcohol in a really, really hot furnace. Great.
And not to mention heavy tools.
Heavy tool. What a great combination. Well, I'll be honest, I have not yet met a single blacksmith of any variety, shape, or ilk for swords, armor, tools, whatever, where they didn't like having beer nearby, at least.
You know, there are very few hobbies I have that I don't want a an alcoholic beverage around. Generally, if I'm doing woodworking and I'm using power tools,
Not so much.
wait.
Not so much.
Let's
But swinging hammers, perfectly good.
yeah.
Be responsible, guys. Anyway, so anyway, is there any other ways of making a waterless mead here?
I don't think so. In the long and short of it, you've got your purees, you've got your juices, and you've got your whole fruits. Those are the three big ones. And there are probably some in betweens. We could talk about, for example, there are other concentrate methods, like Amaretti makes a concentrate, the Vintner's Harvest makes a concentrate, but you're diluting that with water, so that doesn't really
I'm
count
not
as
sure if I
waterless.
don't. I'm not sure I want to take a gallon of Vintners and
And
throw yeast and honey in with it and see what happens.
right, that would. Because it's so concentrated, it probably wouldn't be possible.
I'm not sure the meat has. I'm not sure the yeast could get a hold of the correct level of oxygen
Osmotic pressure
and
would
my
probably be
pressure
too
to
much
do
for
what
that.
I want.
Right.
Here's something I was thinking about while you were talking about using whole fruit. And okay, we have both made syrups with sugar and a fruit.
Yes.
Is that potential something? I mean, I literally thought of it while you were talking. I wanted to run it by you.
That's possible, and it
You
occurs
throw
to
a
me.
bunch of peaches or whatever berry with sugar and leave it alone because it will liquefy it. It's basically emulsifying.
To an extent, yeah, it pulls all of the liquid and other stuff, anything soluble, out of the fruit. That is, to my way of thinking, an approach to maceration, and we could try reasonably, as well as just using. Like the oleosaccharum approach to making cocktail syrups, where you take like the peels of citrus and you soak it with like granulated sugar and let it sit, as it extracts all the oil and stuff from the citrus peel.
Yeah.
I did basically a different thing with the grapefruit mead, where I soaked the grapefruit peels in honey. You could put any kind of fruit into honey and just let it start to extract itself. Depending on the ratio of honey to fruit, you would definitely get liquid out of there. But would you get so much liquid that it dilutes the honey to the point where wild yeast existent on the fruit could take over and start fermenting on their own?
No clue.
Possibly.
I
I
don't know.
don't know. It really depends on ratios. You know, if you're basically filling up a jar and then letting honey drizzle into all the little cracks and crannies, you got a better chance than not.
Mean, with sugar, just white sugar. My son and I put fruit in and made pancake syrup.
Yeah.
It was thin pancake syrup, but it was blueberry or and peach and whatever else we did, syrup.
My son's done the same thing with strawberries. Yes,
Yeah.
it's very, very doable.
So I want to bring it up because I'm sitting here, it's waterless, but would it work? No clue, but I wanted to bring it up.
I would think the amount of sugar to get that
Or even
liquid.
if we exchange it with honey.
Either way, the amount of sugar content, let's be glib about it. The amount of sugar content stuff, whether it's white sugar, brown sugar, honey, what have you, is still going to be substantial getting the liquid out of whatever kind of fruit. Is it possible it would start fermenting once you dilute the sugar by adding fruit juice? Yeah, possible.
It's just a thought. Mm-hmm. I wanted to bring it up and band around with you.
This is it's definitely one of those mad scientist things that we're going to, for sure, going to explore at one point or another. I don't know how intentional or...
Do you realize the size of warehouse we need for our experiments, man?
Yeah. We're outgrowing this garage even as I clean it out.
Yeah. I've had worse fates.
So, basically, yeah, I think those are the three approaches to making a waterless mead. And one way or the other, understand that we are making a fruit bomb. Because we're using, not necessarily making a fruit bomb, probably making a fruit bomb. If we're doing a juice thing and we're using, like, apple cider or pineapple juice or whatever kind of, like, juice you could normally buy cheaply at a grocery store, that's probably not going to be a high alcohol by volume finished product just from adding a small amount of honey to make it a mead. If you could go big with it, you definitely could make it a higher APV product, but it's not necessarily definitely. If we're talking about a puree or a whole fruit situation, more likely than not, we're talking about something that is going to be high ABV, high residual sugar, and hard, hard, hardcore in the fruit flavor. Yeah. So right up your alley.
Yeah. That dragged my alley.
The finish on this is going to take some attention too, because, we're talking about something that is probably fermented on the skins. So tannin is something we're going to have to take into account. If you're using blueberries, you probably don't need very much. You might want to do a little oak or something fancy just to kind of boost it up. You might have all the tannin you need. Something you're going to have to taste and judge.
Yeah.
Acid is very much in the same context. I mean, if we're using strawberries, we're probably not going to have as much acid. If we've got blueberries or blackberries, there's...
Or even huckleberries. Ooh, they're...
There's an appreciable amount of acid in those comparatively. Oh, yeah. So it's another thing we're going to have to taste and adjust. We're probably also, even if we ferment it as close to dry as we can get, which may or may not be possible, depending on how much honey and fruit stuff we start with in the first place.
Yeah.
You still might want to back sweeten it. You're definitely going to have to stabilize it.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen some of these guys with, final gravities of 1050 to 1060.
Jeez.
And if you can get a yeast that will survive at, that alcohol content and residual sugar amount, it's got plenty of ammunition.
Yeah, it really does. And actually, one of the questions I was asked when I was talking to Ben was, how can I make a higher alcohol volume? I said, dude, and he's one of these guys, he doesn't use the drum generally. It's by volume amount. I said, I don't do that. And I explained why. He goes, that's a good idea, but I'm not going to get one. I said, if you want higher ABV, you're going to fly by the seat of your pants, but add more honey.
Alcohol starts as sugar.
Yeah.
You start with more sugar, you give the yeast more opportunities.
Yeah.
There are different ways to add more alcohol. They EC1118 and K1V have an 18% potential alcohol to them. Okay, that's a start. The
I've seen the fortified meads, all that.
Distiller's active dry yeast, supposedly, will go 20 to 21%.
Oh my goodness.
That's for distilling. So flavor. Their flavor isn't taken into account. Yeah. They're going to do so much other stuff that it doesn't matter.
Yeah. If you're looking past 18% alcohol, I don't know if your flavor is your first goal at this point.
No, and this is generally the couple of people I've talked to about meads at the Renaissance Festival that were interested in making mead, and, I made this one mead that was so alcoholic, it was like 19%. Like, cool. Did it taste good?
Didn't have an answer, did they?
I didn't ask. I knew they didn't care.
Okay.
Like, you're one of those guys. Okay. Well, enjoy your booze.
Would you dress up like a Viking?
Yeah.
Probably. Okay. The answer to that question.
It's been like 6-7 years since I had this conversation with this gentleman whose name I don't even think I got. But yeah, no, he probably was dressed up like a Viking.
Now, guys, I've met great Vikings out there, but a lot of you guys, you want hard stuff and you want me to hard stuff. And I don't know why. But I've tasted some of your stuff, guys, and I was not impressed. I'll be blunt. I'm like, oh, God, I hope you enjoy this. I don't. But anyway, so.
What those guys really need is just a dedicated honey shine source.
Yeah.
Or whatever we're going to call the the distilled mead yeah. product.
Why not? But that's not my alley.
No,
it's not my purview.
I want a nice, flavorful, digestible kind of beverage to enjoy with friends.
Yeah, appreciate taking on this thing and expanding my knowledge on this the waterless thing. Yeah, appreciate your research.
One or both of us is going to have to try one of these sooner or later. Yeah. I've been a little bit gun shy about jumping the gun on it, but I mean,
I'm a little short on buckets at the moment that I'm willing to bring out.
That's fair. I'm going to have to empty a couple into my rotation here sooner or later too.
Yeah.
I happen to.
Do buy. I have buckets? Yes. Do I have space for buckets? Technically, is my wife going to tolerate? Probably not.
There is more to this hobby than just providing the alcohol that keeps your wife happy. Sometimes it's not pissing the wife off.
Helps immensely. Happy too. Yeah, she's got the best opportunity to take revenge when I'm asleep. You know, 1 foot away from her.
Level of trust there that you're putting your guard down.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, I married her. I got to deal with it. Anyway, guys, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate your time. And hey, give it a try. Give us some feedback. What do you want to hear about for this test?
Have you made a waterless mead? We'd love to hear more about it.
And tell us about what you did with waterless mead if you made one.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, give us some details.
Some flavor profiles. You know, did you make it with blueberries? Did you make it with raspberries or blackberries or what have you? Did you oak it afterwards? Or did you add spices and other stuff? Did you fortify it? There's all kinds of stuff you could be doing with this. And I'm sure you guys have all kinds of creative stuff you've tried before. So I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, me too. So guys, have a great day. Jeff, thanks a lot.
Chris, see you next time, buddy.
See you next time. Happy meeting, everybody.